All right. So, peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallets Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, I want to run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls. They usually last for about 2 hours. I want to thank you in advance for coming to hang out with us. I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in our Black community and in an organized and intelligent manner. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we do not discuss religion. We do not discuss the Black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to Black people in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this or which party did that. The reason why we do not discuss these topics is because they are all opinion-based, which means no one is right and no one is wrong, and we could be here all night arguing, going around in circles, and not making any progress. So for all the guests on the call, let me tell you a little bit about the Black Wallets Matter organization. We are a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we are going to fix the problems in our Black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the Black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spend $1.4 trillion a year in consumer spending. So if we were to pool our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. This is a form of Black capitalism. I don't know how you feel about that system, but it's the only one that we have here in America, and any radical ideas about operating outside of that system will just be a waste of precious resources. So the best thing for us to do is to learn the rules of that game and get really, really good at playing it. And that's the purpose of the Black Wallets Matter Member Association. So we want to bring together a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the Black community and are motivated to take action. We want brothers and sisters who believe that the first solution to solving our problem is uniting with one another, and then secondly, investing in ourselves and our people. And the reason why is we're looking for brothers and sisters who prioritize unity and investing in ourselves is because we have a systematic problem. And with the oppression, the racism, and the injustices that we face, it is baked into the American system. And so what we need is a systematic solution, right? Our brothers and sisters, our leaders of the past, we have never taken the time to build a system to counterbalance the oppression and the injustice that we face. And that's why nothing else has worked for us before. Building the system that we are talking about will require patience, and it will require us to learn a lot of things that we do not currently know. One of the main things that we're going to have to learn is how to organize and cooperate with one another. Even if we have differences, we have to understand that we must put our differences aside and work for the common goal of the collective. With the support of a few intrepid brothers and sisters and a well-thought-out plan, we believe that we can succeed. This organization has a blueprint that outlines our plan for how we can go from where we are now, which is, you know, a point of disarray, to how the Black community can become well organized, focuses economic and political power, and make serious changes for us as a collective. This will take generations to achieve. We understand that, and so that's why the members of this organization, we prioritize leaving legacies. We prioritize building something for the future. We prioritize our children and our grandchildren. Nothing works overnight. There are a lot of systems or a lot of things that are out there that have happened, that we think happened like overnight, but the wheels were set in motion years ago. And so that is something that we are looking to do. We are looking to set our people on a straight and true path. We will need a cultural shift in the way we do things. We are going to need an economic shift. We're going to need to pool our resources in a way that they benefit us and not just benefit those who distribute and sell to us. And we are going to need, economics. Politics. That's what the third leg is. We're going to need political strength. And the reason why we're going to need political strength is because that is the way things get done here in America. If you go back and you look at the institutions of slavery, that was an economic and political move. It's essentially what it was. It was to build economic and political power. And so that is what we need to prioritize as a people. So the end result, the overall goal for this organization is to create community resource centers in neighborhoods that desperately need them, to offer opportunity to our brothers and sisters, and to shape and mold our youth. What the community centers will look like, they will look like vocational schools. Young brothers and sisters will be able to go into those schools. They will be able to learn trade. They will learn plumbing and electricity and, you know, computer programming and any of these things that are necessary going forward, so that they are able to make a living with the skills that they have. Right now, we have very, very little capital as a people. The only thing we have really is entertainment and sports and things like that. But that's not something that we all can participate in. That's not something that could benefit us all. So our brothers and sisters need to go back to being able to earn a living with their own skills. And once we teach those brothers and sisters that, we will have the children there as well, and the children will be getting this cultural education, or this cultural, we basically call redefinition, because the way that we believe now, our people need a shift in mindset, but it would be really, really hard to convince a bunch of adults to just change their mind when they have been living their lives 20, 30, 40 years, you know, as black folks, having the experiences that they've had. But the children, we can catch them before they have these negative experiences, and we don't have to change their minds. We can shape and mold their minds. We can shape and mold positive experiences with other black men and women, right? And when we have a generation of black folks who grow up with that redefinition of what it means to be black, they will go out there and they will meet other black men and women, and they will have a sense of cultural collectivity and a sense of productivity. That's one of those are the two main components that we are sorely missing as a people. We have the money, right? I was just reading something, and I think they said almost $200 billion in money in banks across the country, like 200 and something billion, and the Asians had like 46 billion, so let's round it up to 50. The Latinos had like about 45. So we have like 200 billion. So we definitely have the money. What we do not have is we do not have the unity that some of these other ethnic groups have. And if you go and you look at them, the way they operate, they look more successful than us. They're definitely more united than us. And so I have a few questions that I was thinking about today, and I'm going to pose them. So we're going to kind of change up the format of how we do things a little bit. Normally we go through this process, and then I make an invitation to for the new guests to join us in this organization. But you know what? I just want to open things up for this line of question and open up this discussion. And if the new guest on the call, if you enjoy what we're doing here, if you see value in what we're doing, coming together as a collective, right, if you feel that the minds that are here, the information that we're sharing, if that sounds like something that resonates with you, then we would like to invite you. We don't want to invite people blindly, because what we have now as a collective, what we work on together, we have something of a tight-knit family. and the personalities that we have, the cohesion that we have is really something beautiful. It's really something to see. And people have to self-select. They have to understand and see if this organization is for them. And so we're going to switch it up and we're going to do it like that. So what I am going to do is I have a few topics here, and I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. Okay. And so what I want to say is what I want to ask, if the system of racism was designed to benefit a certain group of people based on skin color, how motivated do you think those people would be to see the system change? Right? I just want to ask, so, you know, I'm posing this question to the floor. If the system of racism was designed to benefit a certain group of people based on their skin color, how motivated do you think that the rest of those people would be to see that system change? Press star 6. Okay, cool, Brother Vaughn. Give me a sec. We have a few callers come in here. Caller from 404 area code. Your first name, please.
Kayami.
I'm sorry, sister.
Kai.
Kai. Okay, sister. Could you help me out with the spelling of that?
K-A-I.
K. All right. K-A-I. Okay, sister. Kai. Gotcha. Thank you, sister. And let's see here. Caller from 914 area code. Your first name, please. Caller from 914 area code. Your first name, please.
Cedric.
I'm sorry?
Cedric.
Okay, cool, brother. Hold on for a second. Brother Cedric. All right. Thank you, brother. Brother Vaughn. Yes.
What's going on, brother?
All right. So the question is, if the system of racism was designed to benefit a certain group of people based on their skin color, you know, how motivated do you think those people would be to change the system?
Not motivated at all.
Right. So we know, right, back in the days of slavery, we know that not every single colonizer had slaves. And shout out to Sister Mai for pushing me to go see Black Panther. So we know not all of the colonizers had slaves, right? I don't even know how many, but it was a small portion. So those other colonizers, why do you think they would want to keep the system in place, though? Right. So let me ask you this. Okay.
Even though they didn't participate in the same manner, it was still beneficial. Just like today, the way they do things today, you know, all of them don't participate in the same manner, but they all benefit. So when something happens, they like, oh, it's not like that, really. It's not really because the way that things are going is beneficial to them, so they don't even look at it in the same way.
Okay, cool. All right,
they don't look at it like we do.
Yeah, I know they don't have the same experience that we do, and I tell them that all the time. I'm like, listen, you know, they like overstep the boundaries. It's like, yo, yeah. Okay, maybe you're not participating in anything overtly racist or whatever, but you are definitely a beneficiary of the system. And then more importantly, how are you telling Black folks how to feel about the racism? Like, that's the thing that kills me.
That's the
one I really care. Yeah, yeah.
I got a question too on that topic in the sense, like, with that being, right, and we know they're not going to like that. What y'all feel about, and I'm asking everybody, how do everybody feel about us protecting us?
How do we feel about us protecting ourselves?
Yes. We don't have to.
Hold on, wait. I get it on a surface level. I want to internalize that. How do we feel about protecting ourselves? Well, I know immediately that we're going to say it's absolutely necessary. It's a no-brainer. I have a second part. I actually have another part of this question here that kind of corresponds with that. And basically, so what I was going to say is, so you're saying we have to protect ourselves, and my other part of that question is, so why is it, so we saying that no, they're not going to be motivated. So why do black folks, or most black folks, feel it's important to have these colonizers understand that we're upset about the injustices of racism by marching and protesting and screaming bloody murder every time something happens, instead of organizing and making an economic or political impact? Because that's essentially us looking out for ourselves. So now I guess I'm trying to like flip it back on you. Like, so why aren't we doing that?
Well, they told him that marching and doing all that stuff means something. And then our so-called leaders are the ones who enforce and put forth the effort. Don't do this, don't do that, just march and we can come together and we'll make change, and then everything pipes down and it's pushed over to the wayside. So it's like it's the part of the system. That's the part of the system that they got us by the throat. Like, right there is where they got us by the throat. Like, we want to do something, but the people that so-called lead us always tell us don't. The churches and the NAACP and the folks who we gonna look to when it's like, bruh, it's on. What like we gotta? They go, nah, y'all go home, be cool, go home, calm down, don't have no problems. Everybody just cry. So it's like we be stuck on that for the first 6 months, and then 6 months later, everybody got the same fire in them no more. You either forgot about it, moved on to something else that happened, and you know what I mean? So,
All right, cool. So, thank you so much, brother.
Let's get it.
All right. Let's get it. Yeah, exactly. Sister Shauna.
Hey, brothers and sisters. So you kind of piggybacked on exactly what I was getting ready to say, is that you can moan and complain about the system all you want. Is what are you prepared to do for yourself and your family? Because even though the system exists, the system isn't stopping one single person on this call or one single person that we know from doing and achieving anything. So we can fuss and complain about the system all we want. We know it's there. We know nothing's going to change automatically. Even the good, you know, what did you say, colonizers? Right, I like that.
The colonizers.
Yeah, from here. Right, even the, you know, the so-called good ones. And I have a lot of white friends, a lot, that have been very good to me. But I promise you, if there was a hold down, if it's a hold down, I promise you, they're gonna go over there, and we're gonna be stuck right here. So, I have a thing about self responsibility and being responsible for us, and that's why I fight for us, for our mindset, and for the things that we try to do. Because we do too much complaining. We do too much all this other stuff. I think the number one issue, and you hit on it when you talked about unity, the one thing we got to figure out is how are we going to live together?
Well, I'm going to say this. See, you guys are on a roll tonight. So my next question, or basically a statement, it was, so, you know, like you said, the marching and the protesting, like a lot of that stuff, it doesn't have any effect. You know, we're not doing anything with any impact. And I think the reason that is because most black folks, their livelihood is tied to white employment. And so that makes it kind of hard for most people to really rebel. So what I want to ask you is, so what kind of systems of rebellion do you think we can create to let our brothers and sisters keep their anonymity while still showing support or still supporting the movement?
I mean, we say it all the time, and I know it's easier said than being done. You mentioned, you know, we have how much? $200 billion. The only place.
$200 billion in banks. $200 billion in the banks.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
The only place that matters. And I'll give you an example. If you've been at work, well, you've never worked with somebody, so I'm talking to the other callers on the phone. You ever been at work with, you know, the other kind of people? I'm in a public place, so y'all have to excuse me. So you ever been at
the
work
colonizer.
With other kind? Yeah, but they know what that is, too.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. All right.
Right. So you ever been at work with the other kind of people? And you realize that they, like you say, cross the line and say things that you know if I would have said it to you or one of your other persons would have said it to you, it just would have been across the line. You know, you feel like if it were me, you would read me, write me, and tell me one doggone thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who on this call realized that if you tried to do that with those other kind of people, that just don't matter to them. That has zero effect. Zero effect. Cutting up, acting a fool, even when you throw stuff on one foot, none of that has effect. But when you go through the system and chain of command and get things done and get things moved and taken around, right, that move your support from one place to another. That seems to work. When you go tail, right? So I'm saying that we're not asking to be at the counter anymore. So why do we care?
Well, that is I don't have an answer for that.
That's what I'm saying. We're not asking to be there anymore because we don't need to be.
Right.
We have our own. The problem is you got it, Brother Lynn. Sister Shauna got it, Sister Maya, Brother Leonard, Brother Kuhn, all other brothers that trying to figure this thing out. But can we live together? I'm in Houston, Texas, can I stand up as a, and not a pulpit, bully pulpit leader, but just as an authority figure that understands something about business, can I stand up and say to another group, our brothers and sisters, that this is the path that we need to do and we all move together. Can you do that where you are? Can the other brothers and sisters that understand how to move things, can they do that? So when I say can we live together, I mean can we work together?
Right.
And that's the thing I think we're trying to figure out on this call, the thing that we're trying to get members to come aboard and raise their hand and say, yeah, you move, I move. Right? Just like that.
Excellent. All right, thank you, sister.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. Sister Kai. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I came in, you know, later in the call, but one of the things that I recognize is that in order to make any changes happen, marching and protesting is fine, but some stuff starts in the community that we live in. Nobody really wants to be part of changing policies. Policies is what needs to be changing. It's not just the, you know, marching and, you know, going out there protesting. All of that is good because you got somebody paying attention to you. But unless you're willing to take the time to be a part of some organization that is gathering together to change a policy and to keep things from happening and being able to continue to happen, none of this is going to matter. But the thing is, people don't see that. They don't notice and take take notice of the things that are in place that make it harder for people to get jobs, buy homes, or any of that kind of stuff. But until people actually get in, bald that way, nothing is going to change. But people don't want to do that part of it because that means, oh, no, I ain't got time to take off work. No, I can't go to the community meeting. No, I can't be a part of that. They just want to go out and be, you know, walking and protesting and holding up signs. But the hard work is going to come from being in that meeting when they tell y'all that there's going to be a policy meeting or there's going to be some kind of thing where our elected officials are going to be there, and then you can have a voice and you can speak. But if you're not getting involved in that, it's a waste of time. People don't want to be a part of that. Nothing changes unless policy changes. Nothing changes unless people start learning how to, you know, put money aside and have something to leave the families behind. Because money is something that's moving all the time. It's going in, it's coming out, but we don't buy land. We don't own businesses. We don't support black businesses. We don't do any of that kind of stuff because we're too scared to lose the little jobs that we have. We're not getting promoted. We're not getting the money that we deserve. We're working like we're in the slave labor because we don't want to do the hard work that's going to make the difference. If we're not a part of the American dream, meaning owning business, owning properties, getting that education so we can do what we need to do, it is useless. Why do we have like thousands and thousands upon people gathering to march, but where are those thousands upon thousands of people when it comes to making that policy change? We keep electing these people into these positions, but the thing is, we have no idea what they really stand for. But we yell and we fuss about all these things, but nobody gets out there and does the work. So who are we connected to? And I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm part of the NASW, and a lot of times they always say, let's go to our capital so we can be there when they get ready to try to write this bill or pass this bill so we can stop this bill from happening or make these changes. And half of the people won't even go to that because it means they got to actually do something to make that happen. So nothing changes unless the policies change. The work has to happen in the community, in the Capitol, with the congressmen. And when we tell people call, you know, and complain about this, call and say this and write letters and stuff, nobody's doing that. But they'll go to a march so they can be on social media. So none of this stuff works until we actually get out there and be a part of something. And we don't have to recreate the wheel. There's community people all around, especially in Baltimore City. There's community people all around trying to get our people to join us so we can have more of a voice. But they don't want to do that. So until that starts, until that mindset changes, this pattern is going to continue. And until people start reading what's happening and stop just looking at the pictures, we got to read what's going on, and so we can be, you know, totally understanding of what's happening. We got stuff happening right in front of us. We don't really know it because we're not reading what they just, you know, what bill they just passed. We don't understand it. We just go by the media and let them tell it to us. So that's my rant.
So, sister, welcome, right? Welcome to the call. Very astute observation. So let me just say this, sister. So knowing these things, knowing our folks, knowing the behaviors, what are the solutions, right? Because so first let me ask you this. Do you agree that our mission is too important for us to just accept it the way that it is?
No, heck no, it's not.
You don't think our mission is too important?
No, it's important, but we shouldn't accept the things the way they are. I thought that's what
you're asking. That's what I'm saying. So the mission is way more important than where we currently stand as a
yes.
people. So something needs to be done. Okay.
Yeah.
So have you ever given some solutions, any serious thought?
Yes, and the thing is we got to be talking to the person that's sitting right next to us. See, I can talk to, like I talked to my stepdaughter, who is the one that connected me with this call.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm getting ready to be 50 years old. She's 37, okay? And it took her to say something to me to get me to listen to some of the stuff that's happening, because her eyes are open at the age of 37, where it's my eyes are just opening to some things at the age of 49. So sometimes it takes, you know, the younger generation to give the information to everybody else. But they got to be willing to receive it, because before I wasn't really worried about receiving it, because, you know, it's like, oh, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to do that. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to speak out. But that's until people start receiving what's being said to us, the people that sit right next to us, it doesn't change. So we got to keep talking to the people that are sitting right next to us so they can understand this is happening and how can you get involved. And it just takes somebody like a 37-year-old woman to say this to her 49-year-old stepmother, Ma, we need to be paying attention. So if we can just say it to the people that are right in our faces so they can start receiving what's happening so they can get involved.
Well, first tell your stepdaughter we said thank you. said thank you. And then you should thank her as well for opening your eyes. And,
oh, I did.
Okay, and then when you
today.
check out, go to our website, blackwalletsmatter.org. We have a video on it. It's called A Blueprint. And the blueprint talks about how we intend to address some of our political hurdles. As I learn a little bit more about the system, I'm realizing, so it can be done really well on a local level, but it's going to take something to galvanize and move our people. And unfortunately, we don't have the proper carrot yet, because
right.
Sitting down talking to people. So even when you begin and you start using words like policy, most Black folks feel totally powerless. They don't feel that they're going to be able to do something. Most Black folks don't even understand how, like, the whole system works and even what's going on, and present company included. And,
right.
And you know, and I'm on top of that kind of stuff, but it's just like, it just, you know, my finger is not really on the pulse because, I'm just not, you know, really, I really don't care about politics that much. I really care about, like, the economic component. To your point, though, right, there's, you know, someone needs to get out and do this thing. One of the things that this organization is focused on is hiring the people to do some of the hard stuff. So one of the challenges that we have, right, the Black community, us as a collective, we need all these things, but we don't invest in them. We don't spend the money on them. If
right.
we had someone to go there, disseminate what's going on with these politicians, outline, bullet point the pros and the cons, and just go there and be like, look, here's politics in plain English, and explain it to the folks and be like, hey, go vote for this guy, don't vote for this guy. That's essentially what our people would need. And then probably even put buses together, because if you look at, like, the Koch brothers and some of these other people who try to move masses of people to vote, they provide the transportation and everything. These things require, an investment. But I believe that the investment justifies the means.
Right.
The ends justify the means, essentially what I'm saying. So check out the blueprint. Let's look at some of the things that we're talking about doing. I'm sure you will find that it makes sense. Your passion definitely resonates with us. And so as you're checking out that blueprint, then perhaps you would want to come on board as a founding member and help us build this system in which we speak, so that things can be done.
I definitely will. I definitely will. And the step was for me to just listen to her, and then when she shared that information. I mean, she was walking out the door just now and said, Ma, don't forget to get on that call. And I'm like, oh, thank you for reminding me. But that's just how it starts, you know, because sometimes we don't really know what's happening. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what people are trying to do until somebody shares the information. So, you know, I'll be, you know, I'm looking forward to getting online and seeing what that is, because I don't want to be silent, you know, sitting back, you know, because it's not just about me anymore, you know.
No, so. Thank you so much, sister. Appreciate you.
Not a problem.
Okay. Sister Rhonda, follow out Brother Cujo. You would have been next, but Sister Rhonda is back in the queue. Sister Rhonda.
Yeah, how is everyone this evening? How you doing, Brother Lou?
Peace, Sister, peace.
That question you asked about the system of racism, that's what you want
yes.
us to answer, right?
Well, we done went down a few of them now. So.
I see you done went there, so I'm just going to add my little 2 cents. The sister,
okay.
The sister right before me, that was on, she's exactly right. I agree with her 100%. But we have to understand policy and politics and social mores and norms are different. They intertwine each other, but it's a hard job with politics because some of those politicians, most of the black politicians, after we came out of slavery, they always devised something to keep us quiet. So, yeah, we have a slavery, then we do Reconstruction, then we do the Black Codes. Okay, now some of us want to be in Congress and have a say, but they invent something called a code of ethics for the blacks that they can be in Congress, but you can't talk about your particular group of people. Yeah, you can be at the table, and you can discuss this and that, but you can't say, we want this for the blacks. We want that for the blacks. We want this. So then you have these so-called leaders getting up saying that we're going to lead. And I take nothing away from Michael, Martin, nobody, because they did what they could at the time they could and knew what they could do. The only thing I'm saying for now in 2018, we don't have any leaders. We don't have any leaders. We have awakeners and we have enlighteners, people that will get with like-minded people. And I'm not being selfish, but the thing is that if we keep looking for leaders, we can't look for leaders anymore. We have to do something different. We have to change the paradigm. We're going to keep looking for leaders, and we're going to keep being behind the goddamn eight ball. Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to say that. We're going to keep being behind the eight ball, and we're going to say, oh, you know, I didn't know, like what the sister was saying, we got to be there for the policy, okay? For instance, I was thinking about this earlier because I'm writing something. We got all these states that are legalizing marijuana and all this kind of stuff. I'm not a proponent. I'm a nerd. I drink apple juice and water, but I have to be realistic. I'm looking at the future, and they're legalizing these things, and we're not reading and understanding that some of these things are benefiting our community with the tax dollars that is generated.
Right.
Some people have put into place, they go and they sit, and yeah, we're going to take this tax dollars from the sale of marijuana and use this for our community. I'm all for economics in the sense where it'll help our people. Because I guess I'm not saying about them other people. I'm quite sure they use it, but they probably use more LSD than we do. We probably smoke more pot than they do. I don't know. But we have to look at things economically, and we have to look at things as realistic terms. If we don't get with like-minded people, and I'm not trying to put nobody down. That's not it. But the other ones can see it. We have to emulate it so that they can say, oh, yeah, I'm a catch on to it. It's something like I said last week. People don't do nothing if you tell them. They want to see. They want something tangible that you can grab onto.
Well, let me ask you this. So I heard you mention, you know, you're not talking about everyone and things like that. So one of my other questions for the evening was, when we talk about helping the black community or rebuilding the black community, do you think we're going to be able to help everyone? And then if not, if we're going to have to select a few, what will be the criteria if we can't help everyone?
Okay. I don't think we'll be able to help anyone. I've been on this circuit 800 years, and I am not going to tell you no lie. We're not going to help everyone because everyone is not at the station that ready to pull off. They're ready to stay at that station and wait for the next damn train. And see, the trains are left, but they still waiting. Oh, well, I got to get the number 8 train because, listen, I know that B train go to my stop, but I'm going to sit here and wait for A train. No, that's not happening. You need to wake up now. I don't think that we as a people are ready because of, I want to say, conditioning. But I know, and this I want to say, I know some of us are awake. Some of us are awake, but we're scared as hell. Oh, what he going to say about me doing this? What they going to say about, never mind, what, can you see your devastation in your community? Can you look at that and say, I got to take a leap. I got to get out here and do something because it's just 10 is down and down. I just think that will be done with a select people. And that's not taking away saying that everybody doesn't fit in. I would like to grab everybody. That's been my stance from the beginning. But it's not feasible and it's not possible. It's not going to happen. You never have 100% of anything in the entire world, not just with us, in the entire world.
Right. Okay, sister. All right. Thank you so much for all your feedback, sister. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Brother Cool Joe, what's going on, brother?
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to chime in a little bit later. I got tied up doing something right now.
Okay, brother. No problem.
Okay.
Sister Mai.
Oh, good evening again. So the answer to your question, how motivated will the people be to change the system? Not at all. I agree with first caller, Brother Vaughn. And
so you want me to run down the questions so that you can get a fresh running start? All right. So, right. So the first question was, you know, if the system of racism was – well, first let me go back. Let me ask you this. What do you believe was the real reason for racism in America? What do you believe was the real reason?
Money.
Okay. All right. There you go. And so if that system of racism was designed to benefit a certain group of people, right, with money based on their skin color, how motivated do you think those people will be to change that system? You said
not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Okay. Mm-mm. And so if that's the case, why is it important for black people to have the colonizers understand that we're upset about the injustices of racism by marching and protesting and screaming bloody murder every single time something happens instead of organizing and making a impact on the money or the politics, as, you know, the other sister was talking about? Why do you
not
think
at
it's
all.
No, I'm just saying why. But no, what I'm saying is, why is it, you're saying it's not important, but we do it anyway. So what do you think are the reasons?
Yeah, well, I don't. We think.
Oh, you, okay. All right, yes, yes, okay. Okay, all right, here you go. You're right. All right.
We, as a group of people, think that it's important because it seemed to work before. It worked in the 60s with Dr. King marching, and it worked, you know.
Right.
You know, the Civil War and all that, people were actually standing up and rebelling against the status quo. It worked for a season back then because there were some apathetic people. There were some sympathizers that were non-black that joined the cause. They just saw that it was strictly injustice. And it was mainly the people, I believe, in the North, the people who didn't see that they were directly benefiting from it at the time, which is why they cared, I feel. But that has gone away now with, you know, with generations, the subsequent generations, because those people feel like they weren't directly, like, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I didn't own any slaves. It wasn't my parents. You know what I mean? So they're removed. So the apathy's been removed because they don't see it firsthand. It's not happening now. So they don't see it. They don't have anything to apologize for or feel sorry about because it's like, you're free now. What are you crying for? You know, go to work like everybody else. But they don't own up to the fact that those systems that were set in place during slavery are still in effect today and is the reason that, and that the fact that they are still benefiting from it is interesting. I just saw something on YouTube, I think yesterday or the day before, where it was a video where this young lady was talking about the institutional money, how the money was funneled through like these major banks and how those the loans that they gave to like even Rothschild and the people that are the wealthiest in this country still, their lineage, how those investments were made from the money that was earned from slavery and established institutions like all your Ivy League colleges. And right. All the Ivy League colleges have is where most of your lawyers, your congresspeople, your presidents, you know, were
the elite,
educated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that system used to have to be.
Your phone is breaking up again. Your phone is breaking up again. Hello?
Right now? Yeah, you can't hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. So the criteria to get into those schools is still, you know, the standards are very high
mm-hmm.
and still where most of us can't reach them. The main criteria is money, you know, is income. And the fact that these people will and put in their trust accounts the scholarships for future kids, even unborn, and, you know, that's legal. They legally give grants, funds to colleges for generations so that they keep the status quo. They keep their lineage, you know, the same people, the same types of people from the same bloodline in those positions, and those, again, continue to be your congressmen and your, you know, your politicians. I want to give kudos to Sister Kai because I definitely agree that we need to be much more involved in politics. I personally, and, you know, her language around none of us and we don't and we never doesn't apply to everybody, and I'm sure, you know, she knows that, but every time she's making those comments is like, no, not me, no, not me, no, not me. You know, you can't say all of us or none of us. But I do.
I was actually gonna throw that in there. I was like, well, we do have a sister who's on top of that, and actually she'll probably have to be the people to digest it and, you know, spoon feed it to the rest of us. Because yeah, I find politics like really boring. But you find it interesting, and so that's cool. I care about politics in regards to economic policy, but I don't care about like all that other mumbo jumbo stuff. But that's cool, and that's why you have to have people who are into different things, and that's why we need a group of people because mm-hmm. certain people are going to digest these things and be able to go. We're going to have educators who are amongst us who care about the development of the children in terms of how they're doing with academics and, you know, all these other different things, you know, and so that's why we need different people to do different things, you know, for us as a people. So one last
right.
question then, Krista.
Okay.
So essentially, so what you're saying is that these old world money folks, these elites, mm-hmm. they have assets, they have things that they can, so they have this, they have these assets that they can invest for their future, for their legacy, to continue to think. So let me ask you, what kind of assets or value do you think Black people as a collective have to bring to the market and to capitalize on for the benefit of us all? Like, so what do you think that we will be able to have?
You just said it. We have $200 billion in the bank. That money needs to be put into trust. We need to be investing into insurance policies, which is how those who weren't born into wealth, acquire wealth for the next generation, for the most part, 9 out of 10, buy insurance policies that will leave wealth to their heirs. and they can convert, you know, you can get a $250,000 policy, and they can convert it into, you know, education, into a scholarship. They can, you know, use it to invest. They can use it for whatever reason. And they continue to do that based on insurance, just simple as that. You know, use the same system. We are in, like you said at the onset, a capitalistic society. The only thing, well, the primary thing that matters in this country is money, period. Before color, before name, before anything else, it's all about money. And regardless of how they get it, the people that have it don't want to give it up, period. And so we have to realize just how powerful that is, and not, and at the end of the day, politics is all about money too, no matter what. You know, I found it boring too, but when you look at every little thing that goes on, it's all about money. It could be a street light, it could be a park, it could be a school, it could be whatever you might consider boring and something you're not interested in, but everything is related and tied to money. Everything in politics relates to money. And it's basically about how we can keep getting more of it, or at least not lose what we have, and how to keep others from getting it and from gaining on us and from having an equal platform when it comes to money.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was saying in terms of, if you heard the question, I was like, what can we bring to market and capitalize on for the benefit of us all? So you said, so we have the money, but we need to. So the money is something. So let's say we all go out, we get insurance policies because we have some money. Well, if we keep paying our insurance policies, at some point in time, we no longer have any more money. And so what happens is we need some investment vehicles. And the reason why I gave you that question specifically is because you said they were the beneficiaries of slavery and things like that, which means that they invested in industry. And then the industry was able to throw off the money that would allow them to save, which will allow them to make these other endowments to those.
So one thing you said, though, I disagree with. When you keep spending your money into these insurance policies, you don't get rid of all your money. And so that's not how it works. You're giving a limited amount of money every month to this policy. The policy itself is an investment tool. That policy earns money. It earns money on the money that you're putting in there. That's how it creates wealth. And then when you pass it down to your heirs, they continue to invest in it, or they use it for, you know, their needs. But whatever their needs are, hopefully you're teaching them to continue to invest it. So
are you saying you put $500 into the policy, what, you're going to get back $650 or just $600? When are you like, are you saying?
Yeah, there's different policies that are tied to different things. You have some that are tied to the stock market. You have some that are tied to commodities. You have some that are, you know, it just depends on your risk tolerance, how much you invest versus how much you gain. So there's variable annuities. There's a lot of different types of insurance policies that you can get, and you can get them where they're diverse as well, like any other portfolio, where you have this much is going, you know, say I'm giving $100 a month. Well, 20 of it is going to go into this type. It's like you know,
a stock. It sounds like stocks.
And some of them are tied to the stock market.
Yeah,
some of them are.
We're going to have to. Let's see how this call. Let's see what's going on. There's a few people jumped in the queue. You're going to have to give us a whole education on that, because I never knew that. Now, I am familiar with this technique where you can invest your money in it and then take loans out against it, but still I don't see how that's going to generate money for you. But if you're saying there's life insurance policies where you can put money into it, it generates a profit through interest,
absolutely,
pays you back, and all of that, that is definitely something we need to be aware of.
Right.
Let's put a pin in that, sister, and I know you're not going to let me. So definitely.
Okay.
All right, cool. Sister Lola. Peace, sister.
Good evening, Brother Lou, and all the other callers on the call tonight. I just had a comment, and my comment was I just wanted to just kind of I guess, put this out here about my mom. She actually fought to get early childhood in our school. My dad, he worked for school education, so that politics thing is kind of in my blood. Right now, I'm a preceptor.
Yo, I'm sorry. Your phone is going. Your phone is going in and out. Sorry. Hello, sister. Yeah. Your phone's going in and out.
You hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. No. Okay, you say you are a what?
I was just making a comment.
I heard you. You say your mother fought to get the early childhood education in your community, and you have politics in your blood. And
my dad, he actually worked for adult education for 33 years. And uh-huh. For those familiar with adult education, it was to keep adults in school. So whatever it took, you know, whether they had to go to the doctors or had to go to the store, he actually had the option to drive the bus and take them to places they needed to go just to keep them in school.
Okay.
But I guess the reason that I'm bringing that up is just letting everybody know it is very important to be in into politics, because that's tied to a lot of things that's going on in the community. And if they, you know, don't hear our voices, then they not respect us. And I think a lot of that is what's going on right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, sister.
You're welcome.
Hello? Okay.
I'm here.
Is there anything else you want to add in summary? Okay. If not. Brother Jeff, you're live, brother.
Peace, Brother Lou. Peace, Brother Lou. And peace, family. Good evening. Good evening. You're talking about why, like, every time somebody, something happens, you know, to a black person get killed, brother, sister. I think the reason why they go out and they march and they protest, the thing is because I feel like we don't know no better. We follow the same routine, you know, of the past. And we're past the past. So
we passed the past.
So it's like there's no change, and it's not making a difference. What we're doing on these calls every week is making a difference, because we building something, creating something new. That's, like I say, it's because we're doing something that's past the past. It's just the thing that we're going to have to do is, like I say, we always want to stand up when something bad happens to a black individual, but what we need to start doing is sitting down and doing the things that we're doing collectively we have to create a transfer of power. And when I say a transfer of power, what you have to do is when they create a death, we need to create something that takes their power away. Like go on a 30-day strike of shopping at this store or that store, or, you know, take their power, touch the money. Like you said, the money controls it all. You take that money from them, they'll listen to you, they'll see you, they'll feel you. But if you keep just going out march for a day and protest for a day, then it's business as usual. You back, you know, doing what the man wants you to do. But you cut his money off, he'll hear you, he'll see you, he'll respect you. But this can't be a one time thing. But like I said, you do that for 30 days, cut that money off, and start feeding the money into your community. But we gotta make more things available for ourselves though. Because, like you say, we're scared to break away and create for ourselves. But that's what we got to do in order to change this thing. If we don't do that, it's just going to be the same, like I say, the past. And we got to, like I say, sit down, get together, and shut their money off. Hey, they'll listen.
Hey, brother, that's what I always used to say at the beginning of the calls. I didn't, you know, go, you know, I didn't run long because I had a few topics that I wanted to bring to the floor, and we're trying to just mix it up. But like I say, you know, as the biggest spenders in the American economy, man, you know, like, you know, if we was to boycott certain businesses, like every time they, you know, every time they killed one of ours, we got together and we killed off one of their businesses, like they would really sit up and pay attention. And realistically speaking, that's exactly what it's going to take. It's really going to take something like that. And then you can best believe that, you know, America understands, they understand economics. And when we start showing them that we understand economics too, then, like you said, we will gain so much more power. The other thing, too, we will gain allies, because then other people would come to court us. And then those are people with other power. And they, so let's just say, let's just take Target, for instance, right? Let's say if we did something like that with Target, well, then there's a chance that Walmart or one of these other, you know, whoever else is in that race, Sears or Kmart or one of these other people may come and be like, hey, listen, we didn't do anything to you guys. Look, we got some jobs, we got this, we got that, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, and it's the same thing with the politicians. If we got together and we told politicians, listen, we do not like the policies you're implementing. We put you in there. It didn't work. Guess what? You will not be there a second time. If we were able to go and start really exercising that power, that you would best believe the politicians that come to us, they will definitely start making sure that they, Sister Rhonda, I believe, was talking about it. She was saying the code of ethics or whatever it was, a code of conduct. But there are always things for special interests, man. They have these lobbyists, and they get in there, and they do these things surreptitiously. They actually put policies within other bills that are being passed. And they even have this thing right now where they're putting this stuff in these bills, and then the other people sitting around like, what's in it? We're like, well, we won't know until we get it passed. And then they pass it anyway. I'm serious. They just did that with one of these things. We'll let one of the political nerds chime in on that. Because maybe they know Sister Mai or somebody like that, or Sister Rhonda, one of the people who actually pay attention to that stuff. All right, Brother Jeff. All right. So I want to thank you, Brother. Is there anything else you want to weigh in on? Well, let me ask you this. Brother. Yeah. So here's the question that I posed to another sister, Sister Sean. So most black folks, their livelihood is tied to their employment, which is usually with the colonizers. Right. And so that makes it hard for us to have like an outright rebellion. So what kind of systems of rebellion that you think? Well, actually, you know what? You just answered that question for me, which is the reason why I popped it. You just mentioned it, a boycott. That would actually be the right. That would be the. All right. Thank you, brother, because that it just came to my mind.
You got it.
OK. All right. So we got Sister Kai again. All right. We're popping tonight. Yes, sister.
Yes. So I guess most of the time I'm trying to chime in while somebody is talking, but when we talk about the economics, and I so admire what she was saying about the like life insurance policies. I used to be a life insurance agent, but one of the things about that is it's good to have life insurance policies, and then we leave that money to whoever. But if the person that we leave that money to is not educated on how to invest and how to put that, where to put that money at, that money goes away. It's just liquefied. They just spend it. They don't. But see, yes, we have a serious, major buying power in our community. But what if we use that money to buy property? We have got to buy property. We have got to buy land. We have got to use money that we have to own a piece of something in America. If we don't own property, we don't really have as much leverage as we think. You know, having money is great, but having land is what we pass on to the next generation. Is because money, if people are not motivated and educated on how to use money, then we have a whole lot of people with a whole lot of money spending it on a whole lot of stuff that don't matter. So we need to use that money. We're going to stop spending money in Target and Walmart and, you know, Nikes and Jordans and Red Bottoms and all that kind of stuff. We take that money. And instead of renting property, buy property. If these young people, when they get out here and they start their lives with their new spouses and stuff like that, and they go and buy their first house, that is what we leave. That's what we get to use, because that's what draws interest. That's what matters. But we can't just have money. We have to be buying up something. The black businesses, that black Wall Street that got burnt down, they had that stuff. Why do you think those people came and burnt that all down? Because that is where the money was. These people had black businesses. They had property that they owned, and they came and they burnt that stuff down. Because they know that if they have that, they can't do nothing with us. So we have to start making a change in what we use our money for. Use the money to get property. Own something. We have to own something. Own these businesses. Own the buildings that the businesses are in. And then that what is what we pass down. Because what they pass down, these people are inheriting a lot of money. They inherit these businesses, they inherit these buildings, and that's why they have a leverage. We didn't have none of that. So we're not passing nothing down. When somebody in our family passes away, yeah, they got a life insurance policy. I've had life insurance policies passed down to me. But if I didn't use that money to buy no property, what can I say about the money that got left to me? Nothing. Did I buy new clothes? Did I buy a new car? Where is the property? So we have to educate our children. We have to educate those we leave it by. And we have to be able to leave them the land, leave them the property. My grandfather, he was the product of his mother being raped by the slave owner. And that man, the Turner legacy or whatever, he gave my grandfather 71 acres in North Carolina. So that's 71 acres that my grandfather now owns. He passed away, and that land only could go to somebody in the family. So, again, when we get money, we need to use that money to buy the land. That's the only thing that's going to put us where we need to be. And until people really get that part, having a dollar in my pocket won't mean nothing. We can get the land. We can get these policies. We can use the cash interest that grows on it. But we need to take that and then buy the land and put the goddamn Jordan somewhere else. You know, we're making these people rich because we're so busy on what it looks like. But I don't need to look like I got money. I need to show that I got land. That's the only thing that's going to matter.
Well, sister, I want to say this. A lot of folks they've been saying that for years. You know, and that was the conventional wisdom passed on to me. You know, when I got $2 over lunch money, I'm going to just give a brief economic lesson here, and this is not, you know, this is not against anything that you're saying, but this is like the reality of what it is. Most of our folks at this time, and you did say this too, so let me just say that. Most of our folks, holy cow, look at this cute, Jesus. Okay, let's be quick. So most of our folks, right, what they need to do first is they need to buy a business or start a business or be involved in some other additional passive income business.
Right.
Because, see, what the part that we miss, most of these white folks that are passing on things, they're passing on the family business. They have a way to generate the income. Because
absolutely.
What happens is when you buy the house, when you buy the land, right, the house that you live in is nothing but a place that you're just paying bills. You're just paying bills.
Right.
Because you got the mortgage, you got the insurance, and once you even get the mortgage paid off, You got the taxes, you know, all of that stuff, right? So those are just bills, and usually those bills are higher than what you would pay if you're renting, depending on where you are in the country. So it's not just so-called buy the house. And then the land. You got to remember, back in the days, they were saying, okay, cool, yeah, buy the land. But you buy the land because back in the days, people were farming. People were actually doing something productive with the land. Right now, people aren't doing anything. I've had people call me and say, hey, listen, I inherited all of these acres of land. Hey, what am I going to do? You're not going to do anything but pay taxes on it because you don't have any money to develop it. And so then what you would have to do is go and get it cleared out in order for somebody to come and look at it to do some development, or you have to give up so much percentage or so much ownership. So what our people really, really need to prioritize is they need to start prioritizing business or some kind of other passive income investing. So now we systemize this.
Absolutely.
Right. So when she just mentioned the insurance policy that will give you a return on your investment, that piqued my interest because that would be a form of passive income. And then we can go and right. And then the other thing that I have learned from operating this organization, the vast majority of our folks, we're not being taught like this investment advice. Just like politics, when you actually start getting into the nitty gritty of economics and business and things like that, it's boring. It's numbers, it's math. Most folks, they like, nah, I don't like math. I don't want to think about it. But that's essentially what it is. And it's not a cultural thing, right? It's not like we grow up in our house like Asians. Like Asians are in the house. Everything is about mathematics and discipline and structure and finance and whatever else. In our households, it's something totally different. So what has to happen is we need to find some type of vehicle that's really easy on our people for them to make these certain investments. When they start getting the returns on that investment, then they can start looking at some of these longer-term assets, because that's essentially what they are, right? And so it's like now you have to have enough discretionary income where you can live the lifestyle that you want and then also invest in some of these longer-term assets. Because I learned firsthand, you can sink a lot of money into homes. You can't eat equity. I will tell you that. You can't feed your kids with equity. So I did like the fact that you said buy the building that the business is in, right, because then now you're in commercial real estate or all of that stuff. The first thing our people need to do is prioritize either getting into an active business or some kind of passive thing, because they need more income. They need income because the bottom line is we will spend. Many of us come from a time when we didn't have, and so now that we're able to have, you have to get it out your system. This thing holds true for, I will say, about 90% of Black folks. So out of 100, and it's probably even higher than that, I'm being honest with you, because I've only probably seen 2 or 3 Black folks that, like you, got some insurance money, lawsuit money, or whatever it is, and didn't go hog wild, didn't go shopping, didn't go crazy, socked the money away and did something responsible, including myself.
I so agree, and I tell people all the time. It's like, you know, it's I may have one profession, but I have like 4 or 5 other things that are bringing me money when I go to sleep at night.
That is
so necessary. I just, you know, my mindset was never to live my life working for somebody else. That was never my mindset growing up. You know, even though I did what I needed to do to get through, but that was never my mindset. So I never say put my eggs in one basket. You have got to have other options. But the thing is again, they got to be educated on all of that. The life insurance, the investment, the property, and entrepreneurship, all of that. But, you know, unless we teach it to them, to the person sitting right next to us, is going in one ear and out of the other. We have to keep talking about it on a regular basis. But I don't know. People got to be ready to receive it.
When you watch that blueprint, sister, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised.
I got it sitting right here in front of me. You're about to hit play when this call is over.
Okay, cool. All right. Thank you so much, sister.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sister Gwen didn't get a chance to chime in. Peace, sister. Welcome to the call.
good evening, brothers and sisters. From listening to everybody's comments, I agree with everything everybody said, but I think the main point for me is that we need to start rebuilding the black family. All of this is good, but if you go into the urban school system with the young children, they can't even stay in class. Their behaviors are really off the chain. And I invite everybody on this call to just visit one urban school to see what's happening in the school system. One, they're not being educated. Two, their behaviors are all over the place. They walk out of class, and we're not just talking about high school students. We're talking about the babies, the third grade, the fourth grade, the language that they're using. And I think people need to get in the community and start rebuilding the community. The children have no respect for their own parents. And the black family is in a state of devastation. And until that is cleared up, all this financial and economics will never happen, only for a few. So that's...
Well, sister, let me just say this.
Excuse me?
Let me say this. So here's what happened. This whole organization sprang from that experience. So remember, before we start the call, I told you, you know, I'm part of an organization called Wheelchairs Against Guns, and we go into the schools and we talk about, right. So what happened was, when we first started going into the schools, this is before we got the contract with the DOE, the Department of Education. We had the parents, we asked the parents to sign a permission slip. And it was like, okay, you're in, you know, you're in Brownsville, the school is in Brownsville, someone gets killed every single day or someone gets shot, your child needs to learn how to avoid this thing. We couldn't get the parents to sign the permission slips to come to the workshop. So we started thinking about that. And we were like, wait a minute, this is crazy. The parents, they're apathetic to what's going on. They just don't care. And we witnessed exactly what you say. You know, the teachers have no recourse, right, because of...
Hello? Are you still there? Hello? 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 Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Are you guys still there? Yeah, my phone just cut off. Wow, right in the middle of the call.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Okay.
So essentially, we realized that the students, they were unruly. The teachers had no recourse because they couldn't say, hey, I'm going to tell your parent or I'm going to do anything. We saw a lot of students that were raised by, like, their grandparents. They would come in and they would curse the grandparents out and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when we realized that, you know, something has to happen with these children. But then we were like, well, what's going on with the parents? And then we realized a lot of the parents are, some are on drugs, some are just stressed out, some are working 2 and 3 jobs because they don't make whatever is going on. And basically, we kind of like reverse engineered that problem. And so that's why the overall goal of this organization is to build these community resource centers. The community resource centers will allow us to grab these children, catch them at when they're at this point, because they're still young and impressionable. And what it is that when they come home from school, they have no guidance. TV, social media, and whatever else is what teaches them, is what is shaping and molding them. So the community resource centers will allow them to go in there, provide some kind of structure, some of the things that we talked about, and then that will in turn make, you know, change their behavior. And the way that I learned this is because the karate schools, right? So I had a cousin, he was acting up, you know, out of control or whatever. Mother couldn't do anything with him. She sent him to a karate school, but the karate school doesn't act just like, they don't just teach them the karate stuff. They teach them about like the culture of the art, and they teach them discipline and all this different thing. And this kid's behavior just totally changed because he enjoys what he's doing and he respects the system that he's in. And you can do that with most of these children. They're just in a really, really bad environment. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is create these community resource centers. So now, if you know anything about that, right, especially, you know, running these programs, building some of these things that we're talking about, it's going to take an enormous amount of money. There is city, state, federal money or whatever it is, but it's going to be long. There's going to be hoops that we have to jump through. And then, you know, some places it just won't be, you know, it won't be available because maybe they don't have the resources. Maybe the state doesn't have the resources or the city. And so we need to do it ourselves. And the only way we're going to be able to build and support these things is through economics, is through business, is through politics. That's okay, let me just slice off the politics part. We don't need that yet. But so our first step has to be to build an economic base as a group, right? Build an economic base. Then once we have, once we're able to, and then be able to employ some of our brothers and sisters, that in turn will allow more brothers and sisters to come on board. And we're talking about in terms of becoming members of this organization or supporting some of the businesses. And then that will allow us to have more profits, more revenue, things like that. Those profits, that revenue will allow us to build some of these community resource centers and allow us to keep the doors open, because some of the services that we're going to offer are basically going to just be teaching the youth and things like that. We won't make any money from that. But in terms of some of like the vocational training and things like that, we could teach these guys how to become plumbers and welders and things like that, and then turn around and offer plumbing and welding services. And because these guys are students or whatever it is, we probably can be really competitive in that market. So it's kind of all intermingled. It's like Sister Mai said, it's all money, it's all economics. So, you know, that's, you know, the poor behavior and things are, it's just a manifestation of not enough money. You know.
So build the empire of resources and economics, and then provide the services to the
community. And provide, right.
Okay, gotcha.
And you can check out, so like again, like as we offered to Sister Kai, you can do the same. You can check out the blueprint. We map that out A to Z, how we go from here to there. And then, you know, if it makes sense to you, then we invite you to come on board as a member.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sister. Brother Cool Joe.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Peace.
I'm still thinking about the question from the beginning.
Okay, so if the system of racism was designed to benefit a certain group of people of a certain skin color, what would be their motivation to change that system?
Yeah, I think to anybody the answer is obvious. They ain't gonna do nothing to change it.
Right.
But I think one of the things to consider is that the reason why they don't have no incentive to change it. Obviously it benefits them. The system benefits them. Most of these people who we call them colonizers or white people or whatever, they're not the one who controls the system. The average white person don't have the power. It's not like the average working class people. They're not the man. They're not the people who are oppressing us. The fact of the matter is most of these people just work. They make a moderate income, and their first inclination is towards self-preservation. So if it's a system that's designed that benefits them, then yeah, they're going to be all for it. And what's unfortunate is that we don't have that type of system. Historically, in the past, there have been efforts to build a system that specifically focuses on the development of black culture and economics for our culture, but they've been sabotaged. So we've been kind of boxed out of certain things, you know, with all the land that was given out years ago and certain government contracts and stuff like that. And I think over time it just kind of sapped the morale of our people, because even at, like, in modern times, there's a lot of opportunities that exist, but because we have a lack of financial literacy and understanding about how the world works and how this society works, we're not taking advantage of it. But I think a lot of the roadblocks, fortunately, a lot of the roadblocks are out of the way, and we actually can start making advancement. So having this collective effort, which is laid out in a blueprint, is obviously that would be beneficial for our culture. But one of the things I like to highlight is very achievable. I think if we as a people understood economics a little bit better and financial literacy, just like some of the basics, you want to have a resource. Like I've heard some of the brothers and sisters mention tonight, and what we're talking about is not just the money, but you want to have something that generates the money. Like you mentioned earlier, it's not just having the land. The whole thing about it, where like back during the time of the civil rights movement and before that, it was what you could produce on the land that made the land valuable. I mean, it's a whole different story if you got several acres of land and it's sitting on bedrock, and you can dig a quarry in there. You can you actually got a resource there. Or if you got the ground is fit for making bricks or something like that, then you can constantly dig and dig and dig, and you're using that resource. Or other ways that we can use a resource, if we got a business that continually is able to generate money, something that's in demand in society. Like, I deal in the transportation industry, which I've been doing this for about 20 years now, and I've seen several families that have been in trucking to where their kids end up starting companies, and they was able to feed off of the parent company and get their stuff going from anywhere from one truck up to 100 trucks over no more than like a 10-year period. This is the type of understanding and perspective that we need to have. And I know that this is the focus with the organization, like we talked about, being able to provide, which is more or less a resource, or being able to manufacture something so that we can corner some market. At least if it's one thing that we have something to bring to market, we create value for that. And obviously it has to be something in demand, and that's where we continue to have the money generated to do all of the stuff that we want to do. As of now, we just don't have something like that.
Brother, I'm glad you actually said that, because as you were saying it, especially when you were talking about like the land and things like that, so back in the days when most of us lived in rural areas and things like that, we actually had, like what you're talking about is basically like being a geologist. Most of us back in the days, we kind of knew what to do with some land. We knew how to till the land, and we could, you know, dig down and, you know, rub the soil between our fingers and be like, this is this kind of soil, and we could grow some okras, you know, something crazy like that. We can't do it. Right. Most of us can't do none of that anymore, right? We become urbanized. And so, you know, a lot of times on these calls, you'll hear me talking about using the Jewish community as a model for some of the things that we want to do. And that's one of the reasons. So, you know, throughout history, you know, Jewish people, they couldn't own land in certain places. And so what they had to do is they had to learn urban skills. They had to learn modern urban skills. And within those skills, they invented the ready-to-wear clothing market. So, like, clothes off the rack, they invented that. These people were lawyers and all kinds of people, real estate investors and all this stuff in their original country, wherever they came from. When they came to America, they got shut out, boxed out, and they didn't lay down and fold over. They went and they just started making clothes. And then they made so many clothes, they made the ready-to-wear clothing market. And then they was like, hey, you know what? Let's make Hollywood. And they made Hollywood. And then they were like, hey, let's own some record stores and some record companies, and let's own some radio stations, and let's do this. Let's get into all these other different ways. So that's the kind of innovation and ingenuity that we're going to need at some level. And the thing about it is most of the industries are already out there. It's just a matter of us being able to pool enough resources to buy a company and get a toehold, to get a foot in the door in some of these industries. So that way we can learn the game and just pass it on. So I'm glad you weighed in on that, Brother Cujo, because that's exactly what we wanted to get into tonight.
Yeah,
is there anything? Okay, is there anything else in summary, brother?
I think for all of us, I think it's good to have these type of conversations, and we get to the meat of how capitalism actually works. You know, so we have more people on board that we're not running around aimlessly. We're not running around aimlessly anyway, because we have the blueprint. But it just helps to have more people with a clear understanding of what we're doing and why is necessary and important. The more our people understand this and actually see the value of it, the easier it becomes to build it.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, brother.
No problem.
Brother Leonard.
Good evening, Brother Lou, and good evening, brothers and sisters that are on the call. Be patient with me a little bit because I kind of got a lot to say.
Go ahead, brother. Take it from the top.
Okay. As far as the racism is concerned, I think you touched on it when you mentioned the Jews, because many times in these calls you always refer to the Jews. But if you listen to a lot of our calls, is that you in the background? Has that somebody? Okay. A lot of the calls and the guests and the members say this is what we should do. And I want you to understand that word, we. But the acronym that you used with the Jews was less. So there's a difference between pointing the finger saying what we should do, and there's a difference between a collective saying, let's do this. Now, we're going to get there, no question. But when we talk about the politics, when we talk about the family, when we talk about the economics, when we talk about owning land, because we're behind as a collective, we have to address all of those issues at one time. And the Resource Center covers that. But I did want to ask a question to Kai, and I missed the other sister's name, and I apologize for that.
Sister Gwen?
Gwen, okay.
Let me let the sisters respond, brother. Hold on.
Yeah, but I want to ask the question.
Go ahead.
What is it about people that when they listen to the members' call, not the members' call, but to the guest call on Thursday night, what makes them not want to join? Because when you listen to the blueprint and when you listen to this introduction, what is the reason why they feel they won't join? Because this is a no-brainer to me. But I am interested in wondering why we're having this long process for getting the 2,000 members. And I just wanted to ask to see why people decide not to join. And we've come up with a trust issue, but I want to hear their opinions.
So sisters, essentially what he's saying is if you have any reservations about coming on board with us in this organization, what would some of those reservations be?
I don't know if the people that don't want to join is just – sometimes I think – let me speak for myself. Let me not talk about what other people would do.
Right.
When I used to have that mindset before, it's because I used to say, and I'm going to be real transparent, it didn't affect me because I was doing what I was doing, and I knew that, you know, I was getting out there doing the work and making things happen for myself because I had a myself attitude.
There you go.
But then when as my children, because all my children are adults now, as my children started getting actively involved in things, that's when I started opening up my eyes. Because when my children were affected by the stuff that was happening, now I wanted to be involved. But people don't get in there until it affects them personally. So, and not only that, you got to have a mindset to receive. Because I wasn't receiving this information back in the day. I only started receiving the information when it hit me personally. So if we can have the conversation a little bit more, we can start listening to what our children are saying, our adult children are saying, then maybe we'll receive it. But I think people just don't get involved until it smacks them in the face. And that's what it had to do to me. It had to smack me in the face. And I had to be somehow affected by what was happening. And that wasn't happening in the past. But again, like I had mentioned early on, is my adult daughter, who's 37 years old, had to open up my eyes. And when she brought it to my attention, because I love her so much, I could hear her where I could not hear anybody before because it wasn't affecting me. So I think it just has to be, people got to be ready to receive it because it's a renewal of the mind. And there's no change until you renew your mind, renew your thinking, the way you think about things. So I'm not going to blame people for why they're not doing it. I just said that it just has to, it has to be a mind change.
Okay. Okay, Sister Gwen.
For me, I'm just learning about the organization, and that's why I spoke about the family piece. So for me, now the whole picture comes together. I've been waiting for an organization that's going to help our people, and the people that's going to help is the people that look like me. So I don't have any reservations now. I think people don't join because they don't know about it. Right now I'm attending a school for social welfare, social work, and my master's. So I'm going to all the social workers that teach at my school, and I'm going to educate them and let them take a read on the blueprint, and hopefully they'll join.
What he was asking was people who came on the call, who come on the call, and you know some trepidation or some hesitations that they may have. But I will say this though, Brother Leonard, we changed the format a little bit tonight. So we didn't do it like how we normally do it. I didn't go through the whole explanation of organization. Right. So we jumped right in to get into the nitty gritty because I had a lot of things that I wanted to cover tonight. And so they've been engaging. But I'll tell you who Brother Malachi, let's ask Brother Malachi, because he's also a guest on the call. Brother Malachi.
Yeah.
Please, brother. So what kind of, well, I'll let Brother Leonard ask you. I don't want to jump in on.
No, that's fine. This is
your second call, right, brother?
Yeah, it's my second time on call.
Okay. And so what's your impression so far?
Well, I was listening to what the lady was saying about like how she able to take care of situation, like do for self first. Because you take a certain mindset, do for self. You know what I mean? If you don't do for self, you need that mindset to be around other people. Plan and be around other people, develop some type of a sense of financial literacy. You know what I mean? But it starts with yourself. And what I'm getting from all the feedback, the correspondence, everyone, I want to be around people like think like me who like want to have a financial plan for like retirement or our business model, so you don't have to worry about working a 9-to-5, you worry about your bills not being paid or having good credit. Like the other brother said, that our people need to have some type of take a class on financial literacy. You know, how to save your money, how to invest in property, how to open online business. Online business is very common these days. Like investing in apps, like on smartphones or creating a smartphone. I read an article today how Puff Daddy and Jay-Z about made app how look at every independent black business. So it like Sister said earlier, it takes a certain mindset to get there. You know, start with yourself. And once you practice that, you know, save your money, investing in common things like property or the land, that starts to generate. That generate it's like law of attraction. And my question really is that how do we, once we get the information about how to start a business or how to invest in that, what are we taking on from there? You know, do we like network like we do on social media? Do we have like a monthly meeting or conference call like we have now to set our agenda? Because I really believe that in 2018 we have more spending power now than we ever have in the last 10 or 20 years, especially during the holiday season. You know,
right?
Because I read Black Enterprises last year that African Americans alone spent over $10 billion in the year 2017, 2016, and 2015, and that during the holiday season, that's 1 month of billions and billions of dollars can generate from in property. Or, you know, invest in our youth. Like, I mean, we should teach our youth at least 5 or 6 years old how to save money, like eliminate money, they know how to use the technology, how to open a bank account, things of that nature, you know. But that's my take for right now on that situation, you know. But like, I totally agree with the young lady said about her story about her grandfather inherit all that land and how that's passed down to the generation. So like you said, owning something is more important than have a dollar in your pocket. Especially with the dollar right now, it's not even worth anything. It's not backed by gold. It is only backed by what we buy. So I totally agree with her about owning that land and using that land, build a house on, and create a whole community with a population of 30 to 50 people. And each person has the talent to open the business. I know we can do it. And we just need that. We need that wisdom that she passed, like she shared, and today's wisdom with the current generation who have access to money and loans and stocks and bonds and put together. We just got to sit together as one group.
That is the essence of this organization. That is like exactly so. I'm gonna give you a perfect example. The purpose of the organization is to form a business and to perform group economics, right?
Right.
That first business will be a shopping app, right? And that app will allow us to capitalize on that spending, like you're talking about. Like, we are fully aware of all of this, but we have a few we have a few issues that we have to address. So one of the things, so like a lot of folks, like we were talking about earlier, you know, about starting the businesses and jumping out. You just said, like, so once we get that information, like, where do we go? What do we do it? That usually is one of the starting problems. And as Brother Cujo, you know, highlighted, the vast majority, what we have to do is we really have to learn the concept of value. We have to learn the concept of value and selling things that are in demand. That's one of the biggest problems that we're having. Hold on for a second. Brother Lynn, that's it?
Thank you. Goodbye.
Hello?
Right.
Oh, okay. So that right there is one of the challenges that we have with making sure that we have businesses where we're creating things that are in demand, that things that people actually want. The vast majority of us, I mean, business, period, right? So it's like, you know, 90% of some odd businesses or whatever fail. The number for black folks are way higher, and we're jumping into a lot of things, and we're not really mapping it out. We don't have a lay of the land, and we can't get into some of these bigger industries that have higher barriers to entry but more stable income because they require a lot of capital. So basically what we want to do is we want to capitalize on technology and our existing consumer behavior, because one of the biggest things is, you know, no matter what black folks say, man, we shop, we spend our money. I don't have to ask you that question. That's just what we do as a collective. And so that's what we want to do. So when, the other sister, she was mentioning that we need to talk to the people, we need to change their minds, and we got to get them to open up and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about this organization is, we want to use things that people already do. We want to use behavior that people already exemplify, because to try to go and change people's minds and all of this stuff, it was going to require a lot of resources. It's going to require – it can work. Networking can work. Like she said, her stepsister told her – I mean, sorry, her stepdaughter told her, and so she came on, and so it does work. But we have 42 million folks that we have to try to reach. But what we do know is – the bigger industries, they've already used their money, the billions of dollars, to convince you to go to Walmart and Target and some of these other places. Some of these bigger things, they've already convinced you. They've already convinced you to buy your kids toys for Christmas and, you know, buy a sweetheart thing for Valentine's Day and things like that. And so all we want to do is just piggyback on that momentum. That's some of the things. So this is actually Brother Leonard's segment, so I'm going to put that brother back in. I thank you for weighing in and giving us your feedback on the call.
He was forced to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you very much, too.
Brother Leonard, I apologize for that.
It was really, really good. Yeah, I'm here. You got me?
Yep, yeah. Got you.
I think that was very good feedback and positive feedback for us. And I'm sure as we move forward with all of the founding members, when we have our meetings on Tuesday, I think we're at a point now, based on what Sister Mai mentioned, that we should start looking at our skill set. Mine particularly is running restaurants, so that's my skill set. So I'm basically an operator. Somebody may be in real estate. Someone may be in education. Someone may be in family development. We need to start to address those skill sets so as we put our agenda together, because as you find, so many people have different points of view. Like family is basically the essential, because if there's no family, there's no us. But if we don't have economics, there's not going to be any family, because that's typically what happened to the family, was the economics, okay? And we can look at that. We can vacillate back and forth on why. And then with no family, then we don't have a community. So when we start to look at all of these things, and I think the sister said it didn't really impact her until it impacted her personally. And now we're beginning to see, we may even have to ask people, do you have any children?
Because
I didn't think of that, because I have a son. We have a son and a daughter, right? So we're driven by the future. And, you know, our conversations have been what's it going to be in 2065? So, you know, my vision is we're going to be in economic slavery. So with Black Wallets Matter moving right along and continue to build momentum, we will prevent this. So I just, again, want to encourage you and the sister that was on, the two sisters on, join us and move forward. Because if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. And that's the reality of this. But anyway, that's all I have, brother.
Thank you so much, Brother Lynn. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Caller from 816 area code. We didn't get a chance to get your name, caller.
Right now, you got me, Brother Lou?
Peace, yes.
Hey, how you doing? This is Brother Greg. This is my first time calling in. I am a member.
Oh, okay, Brother Greg. Well, welcome aboard, brother.
Thank you, thank you. I saw your advertisements on Facebook, which is how I first got interested, and it was refreshing to actually see somebody with a like mind that had the same goal in their mind, what we actually need to do as a Black community. I'm a man of action, so I'm just waiting to actually get involved and move forward. I've been looking at the organization. I just came in, so I've been trying to catch up on all the past town hall meetings. I drive over the road, so I got the opportunity to listen to hours on end of the meeting.
Okay, well, enjoy, brother. You're gonna be on an emotional roller coaster.
I hope so. You know, so far, like I said, I'm a man of action, so I just want to see where I can fit in and help the most. But more or less, just to push things forward, I think that we as a people need to move. You know, we don't need to get bogged down in discussions all the time. We need some actions, and I think that people respond a lot better to action than they do with a lot of words, you know. So that's where I am. But I just wanted to call in and say hi to all my brothers and sisters out there, and peace be with y'all. Hey, all right.
Thank you so much, Brother Greg. Appreciate you chiming in, brother, and welcome all aboard.
Right. Thank
all
you.
All right. Shake, Sister Teak, then Brother Vaughn, and then we're going to shut it down. Sister Teak.
Good evening, Brother Lou and the rest of the family on the call. I'm going to piggyback on a few people's calls. I jotted down some notes. I can't remember everything, but so I'm just going to go down my list of things that caught my attention. And love to Maya and Leonard. Politics is happening in your life whether you participate or not. So I'm going to just park that right there. Piggybacking on my talking about insurance and other tools, our company actually offers Total Living Concepts that educates people of any race or creed or color or whatever on these products and tools that folks have been using forever. They're right under our nose. Some people pay attention and on board. Some share, some believe, some don't. But that's the thing. That's creating generational wealth. Different products. And it doesn't mean, life insurance doesn't mean you have to be dead. You can use it while you're living. Because I said that, before I move on, I do want to say that everything that you need, Brother Lou, on this Black Wallets Matter journey is on this call. I believe that. I loved hearing from the callers before me. I think one of our concerns right now is redirecting spending. Somebody was talking about the Louis Vuittons and the this and the that and the other. And we see it in movies and we see it in real life. And the reason why they do that is because they don't know better. So a part of the education, I believe, should be redirecting spending. They need to learn how. Brother Lou, you said yourself earlier that you were unaware of products and tools. Of course. There's so many people like you. You're not alone. My mission in 2018 is to educate at least 100 people that look like me in tools that have been around forever right under their nose. We were talking about real estate, land banking. I'm going to a land banking event next weekend. It's all expenses paid. I'm not paying for it. They are, to teach me about land banking, and I'm happy to report back. A young sister last night did a webinar. Her name is Shaniqua Badger. She is a California real estate agent that's powerful. And she and her lender, which was also powerful, shared how cheaper and how it makes more sense to buy land and build a house and go in with equity and use the tools that are available that are in this room, in this space, on this call, buying land. We can do it. It can be done. Don't know what to do about the march part. The marching, I think, that people do the protesting is because it's generational, it's historical, and they don't know what to do. Folks have not shared information that is readily available to actually shift the trajectory of our community as a whole and collectively. It can happen. Which makes me jump across my lines, the language. And you've heard me say this before, Brother Lou, the language. I've heard it long enough. I heard the sister say she's 49 and her 37-year-old. I listen to my kids. They teach me a lot. I get it. There were powerful people on the call. Everything is in the room. And that was my next line. Everything you need is on this call. What they do, we can. Somebody said something about equity and commercial real estate. My company also does that. Total Living Concepts envelops real estate of all kinds, loans of all kinds, and insurance of all kinds. So the education is there and it's available. I wrote down some experiences are so sad. No examples. We have to remember that we have, Brother Lou, you've talked about it before, the crack epidemic. So now you got crack babies having babies, and some of those have had babies, and folks is wondering what's going on. Mental health is real, and miseducation is real, and uneducation is real. Somebody said something about rebuilding the black family. Behavior off the chain, I said miseducation, mental health. And then I put dyes in cereal, processed food, not getting proper nutrition, being in environments like there was something on Facebook on how a police officer treated a young black kid. And then you see different kind of language that is being infiltrated into the minds of these young people. So I have concerns there. Just eating properly can shift a whole lot of that stuff. So I think the center could address those issues too. Proper nutrition and supplements, vitamin D's and stuff like that to prevent cancer. And then I said, legacy of crack. They can't wipe their own behinds. How do they teach their children or grandchildren how to wipe theirs? I wrote down reinventing the wheel. Join forces. There's so many people out there that are not having that same old conversation about what we can't do. I am in relationship with possibility thinkers, and they're always talking about what we can do and how we manifest things that we say that we want in our lives. And so one of those things for me in 2018 is to educate 100 black families on how to change their lives financially. Systems that are tried and true, that's right there. Membership. The conversation was about why people haven't joined. Brother Lou, I share it with you, and I think Mai already knows because, you know, she knows how I roll. But I want to close the deal and pay for the year. And I'm just waiting to close this deal, and I'm a woman of my word, so I'll be a member as soon as I close it. Affects them personally. Somebody, a young lady said, affects them personally. I wanted to say thank you for that because that's the mindset. That's the church's energy that, you know, you got to be a certain kind of way and folks be taking it personal and stuff. 37-year-old daughter, Malachi. I loved what Malachi said about financial literacy, financial planning, retirement credit, financial literacy and apps. Again, I already said my company is all of that and a bag of chips. Everything you need is in that space. Own land. A young lady was talking about 71 acres being handed down to her family. And then somebody said, well, what do you do with it? There's 50 million things that you can do with it. And I'd love to be in the conversation with anybody that has inherited land and what they can do with it and how they can employ people and teach people and all of that, because group economics is not going to happen by itself. Black spending reimagined. I wrote Black Spending Reimagined. Somebody was talking about how we spend. We see it on TV. We see it in real life. I think it's personally disgusting. I will buy a thing or two or maybe eat out more than I should, but Black Spending Reimagined. I would love to do a conference on that alone. Group economics, that you mentioned the shopping app. There's other groups, and I think if we come together and write down all the groups that we know that are like-minded and sharing things across the United States. Somebody on one of the calls said, oh, we can't do this because we're all separated, and I so disagree with that. I would implore people. A sister on your call the other night mentioned George Fraser. I would implore the people on the call, Brother Lou, to YouTube George Fraser connecting the dots and check out how powerful that is and inspire the action that is needed under these conversations with like-minded people. And I thank you for the floor. Leonard was talking about action. I love you, brother. And, yes, that's what it's going to take, action. I love you all, family. God bless. Thank you for the floor, Brother Lou.
Peace. All right, sis. Thank you. Okay. We got Brother Vaughn. Peace, brother.
Peace, once again. A lot of the stuff that I wanted to say was said by everybody else. But one thing I think that we're going to have to, our own mindset is going to have to change, is to be ready to move when one of our brothers and sisters call, and it has to be it doesn't have to affect you or not, whether it affects you or not, whether it's like, it's got to be that collective movement that everybody sees, so everybody knows that when it comes to this, everybody's coming. It's not going to be, you can't go to, you can't just leave Cincinnati because you did something here and go to California and feel like you're going to be cool, because we out there too. Everywhere you go, it's going to be the same thing, and we have to be in that type of mindset, we have to be able to move and organize like that so that everybody sees it, everybody knows it, and that is your power.
Oh, absolutely, brother, absolutely. That's that collectivity that we're talking about, moving as one.
Right, right.
All right. Is there anything else?
That was it.
Okay, cool. And then we have Sister Mai, and then we're going to shut it down.
Hi, peace. I just wanted to go over this. First of all, kudos to everybody on the call. Always a good call, thought-provoking, and well articulated in our thoughts, and I just love the energy. And I love the Devon's energy. He just really seems like he was a real, he'd be a real beat the drum type of dude. Like, let's go, let's do this.
Your phone is breaking up, sister. There you go.
Okay. I was saying I love everybody's energy and appreciate the thought-provoking comments and conversations and well-articulated thoughts and requests that people make. And I was giving kudos specifically to Brother Vaughn. I said I love his energy, his vibration. He's like, to me, he reminds me of like the beat the drums type of dude that would be having those meetings in the back, you know, and every slaves would be a real good ally, like Harriet Tubman or somebody. He just, anyway. I appreciate that. I wanted to just circle back about the insurance policies and just give you an example. And I'm moving over. I moved away from my computer because you said you couldn't really hear me, but I need to be in front of it so I can just run some numbers real quick. Can you hear me good? Am I clear still?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, so I have a quote right here, and this is actually just a personal quote. And what a lot of people do is take insurance policies, life insurance policies, out on their kids. Right, because you're, you know, the youngest ones is how you're going to, and they're healthy. So you're going to get the best rates and you can invest longer. So I have an example, you know, it's a quote here for three different types, but I'll just give you the best because I know, you know, for the essence of time. So this is for my daughter specifically, right? She's 20 years old. I invest $76 a month for her and in just, it just went away. That's green. So in 10 years, at that amount, I would have invested $8,700, right? Personally, I'm paying this just at $76 a month. Surrender value, because of cash value accounts, different types of accounts, right, different parts. Net death benefit, if she were to pass away at 30, $254,000 is what that policy. I mean, it's a $250,000 policy, but $254,000 for 10 years. She passed away. But then there's also a surrender value of $2,100, account value of $4,200. 10 years later, I would have invested. You know, I'd be paying the $17,000. It would cost me $17,400. The value is $267,000. Now, these amounts I'm giving, the $254,000 to $267,000, that's in addition to. It says that's a net death benefit. That's on this, like, guaranteed low, really safe type, right? I said I was going to give you the best love. Sorry, that wasn't it. the best one where it's more aggressive, different types of investments. Let's see, when she is 60, and you don't pay anymore after 65, after age 65. But actually, no, let me give you this one. She's 40.
But hold on. So you're saying the returns are death benefits, though?
So there's different types. So there's a cash value. So there's a cash value accumulation tax deferred.
And what is the cash value?
So this one is 213 at age 70, she'd have $213,000 cash. At 70. But
okay.
That's so in addition so to the can, $250 so, benefit. So she can take that out.
So when you're saying the cash benefit, you're saying that this thing accrues, and then you're able to get cash out. You're able to pull cash out, plus still have the death benefit.
Right.
Okay, and so what was the cash value at 10 years? What was the cash value?
In 10 years, let me go back. Let's be at 30. Is it 42 plus 21? It's 70. Like 7,300, almost 7,400.
Okay, so you paid your $72 for 120 months, right? You paid $72 for 120 months at that point. And so what is that, 72 times on 20? So
of course
paid,
it's the longer it stays in there.
No. All right, right. So
you pay more.
So you paid $8,640. You still have your $250,000 cash value, cash benefit, a death benefit, but you're able to pull out how much money in cash?
$7,300, almost $7,400. And your death benefit is actually a little more than the $250. Although that your policy is $250, you also get interest on that at 7.7%, so it's $254. So your net death benefit is $254 and some change,
okay.
And your cash is $7,100.
So you almost got So you got almost all your money back is basically what, and you can pull
right.
that out, and you can pull that out and still have. And still keep
right.
your death benefit?
Right. As long as you don't stop paying. You just keep, you know, yeah.
What kind of ROI is that?
And when you take it out, when you take it out, you are going to pay interest on it. On that part, on the cash value, you will pay interest. You will pay taxes, I mean, on it. But if you wait, like you have set terms, if you do,
oh,
you know,
that doesn't, that doesn't, in, that means nothing, though. How much was it?
Right.
It was 73, how much was it? 73 what?
7,400.
So you basically got about 84. You get 84% on your money. 84% divided by 84% divided by 10. So you get 8.3%. You get 8.3% return on your money every year. That's what you're saying. That's essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, well, there's no guarantee. Depending on the vehicles, again, you interest, you know, but they're giving
you. These are numbers right here. You're talking my language. Listen, here's what I want to understand. Because if this is what it is, no, listen to what I'm saying. Because if this mm-hmm. is what you are saying, if this is what you are saying, then this is something that, like, we shouldn't be talking about nothing else. No, we should never. No, we shouldn't be telling black folks nothing else. But this right here, so you got to understand what I'm saying. If you 72, and I know the amount you're going to pay every month is going to be different. But if you're telling me you can put a small amount of money, 72, 100 bucks or whatever it is, into an investment for 10 years for insurance, which is something that we're going to need anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're putting that into insurance, right? After, let's say you put in 100 bucks. $100 let's just say it's going to be $10,000 in 10 years. Let's say you pay $1,000 a year and you got $10,000 that you put into this policy. Are you saying that we can pull out $8,300 from that $10,000, keep the death benefit of the insurance, and still have our money, and then all we got to do is still keep paying, and then, what, in another couple of years we can still pull out more money again?
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Oh, my God. And so, I mean, 8.3%. That's 80. That's since, yeah, 8.3% a year is better than the stock market. Like, unless you get lucky and put it into, unless you get lucky and put it into something. I got to talk to you behind the scenes. Because listen, you don't even need bank accounts anymore. That's just crazy right there.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's how wealth is generated by most
people. What kind of policy is that called? What kind of policy is that? What kind of policy is that?
This one is a Synergy Global Advantage Gold. This particular one.
No, I mean like is that like that universal term? Like what is this called? We got to talk behind the scenes. It's getting late.
We got to talk
about this. Brothers and sisters, listen.
But I'm sure there's millions made.
No. Listen. At 8.3% a year return on your money. Right now, we are in a low interest rate environment. The Feds, they're about to start boosting the interest rate thing, but we've been in a low interest rate environment for about 10 years now. So if people can get 8%, return on their money a year guaranteed, then that's really all they need. That's where they need to be stocking their money. And so basically,
right.
you just need multiple policies.
Exactly.
And if you want to save and start buying a house, or you want to get into a business or whatever it is, you just map out your time, get some insurance, right. do that and then pull the money.
That's
now,
how
there's
people
no
do
penalty.
It.
Now, there's no, I'm, okay, listen, all right, I've never heard of this. And so there's no penalty when you bill out. You just got to pay the tax.
You got to pay the taxes, right. There's no penalty. At age 60, you paid $34,800, but your surrender value is $102,450, and your net death benefit is $350,052.
So you pay, I'm not even worried about the crazy top out there. I'm talking about money that people can use to actually
yes.
grow, because it makes no sense to build, grow wealth, and you can't use it, because we don't have, so we can't play the game the way they play it, right? So it's not like, so let's say if they're going to do something like this, they're probably throwing in $100,000. So they throw in $100,000 or some crazy, probably millions of dollars. Because I actually see these, I know some guys, they throw in $5 million, $10 million in something, and they're looking for 5 and 7%. If they can get 5 to 7% safely on their money, you know, and they'll buy like municipals and things like that, other kind of bonds and stuff, if they can get back anywhere from 5 to 7%, they're good, because they live off the passive income, and a lot of the money that you get on municipals is tax free. So that's how they live once they accumulate that big nest egg, and that's how they actually preserve their wealth. So sometimes you'll hear me, yeah. So that's what we need. So maybe next week we'll talk about, you know, trying to figure out your number, because I have a formula that I work with, like how you find what type of number you need to shoot for, and then you need to be looking for investment. And usually what I do is I give them a range of anywhere from 8 to 12%. That's the kind of return you're looking on, because you can get that on real estate. Now,
but
real estate isn't completely passive. What you're talking about here sounds completely passive. That's insurance. So we got to talk a little bit more.
So the point is, like, you can, like I said, like at age 60, it'll be worth $102,000 cash value, $352 the net death benefit, $352,450. The point is, you they can cash in on that at 60 or whatever and do what they want if they wanted to. But the whole part is, when they die, that child now has tax free money of $350,000 starting out.
No, you said
so
when
that's
the child,
their
when
grand,
the child
so your grandkids.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay.
Some parents
right.
are like, "This is my daughter. So when she passes away, like, she can have this $102,000 and leave that in. You know, when she passes, that $350 goes to the grandchild, whoever beneficiary. You know what I mean?"
Yeah, we will.
And
well,
so they start out with $350, the grandchild. So that's how we. That's what we need to do. That's how they.
Yeah, but it, yeah, but if your but if your child is 70, chances are you're dust.
60.
So.
No. Well, 60.
Well,
no,
even still, if your child is 60, chances are you're going to be dust. But
I'm not worried about me. I'm talking about my grandkids.
Yeah, I said, but you're dust. So how are you still paying on a policy when you're gone?
No, you're not. I stopped paying at 65.
You stopped paying. Yeah. Let's talk about this behind the scenes. All right, sister. Brothers and sisters, I want to thank you all for this call. This was a good one. All right. So I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. Join us next week. We'll be back for this. And if, again, like we said, if you are not a member yet, then please check out the blueprint video we have on our website, blackwalletsmatter.org. If it makes sense to you, then we would like for you to come aboard as a founding member.